Blog Talk Radio.
No, that's not what was supposed to happen. Well, we're sending that out to the other teams on the wrong side of the score this week in CIS football. Well, I think those lyrics in that song was probably strumming through the minds of many on the York team, losing 52-1 to Queen. Guelph didn't embarrass Laurier as much as some of the other games, 21-7. Western went into Toronto and 50-14. Windsor, I got a holy moly, baby, that was a tough one. If you're Waterloo, 78-11. McMaster, another route, 51-24. Now we've got Donovan Bennett on the show tonight. He's from Sportsnet 360. He's going to call us. I said call about 10:02, so he probably is a little late. Hopefully he knows how to use the telephone. I think he should. He's a reporter. He should be pretty good at that. And, of course, McMaster beat Ottawa 51-24. Now, I don't know if the rest of the teams had the same kind of luck that the Toronto U of T Blues had in their game. The only thing the U of T Blues won in their game against Western, again, they lost 50-14, was the coin toss. After that, it was downhill. Which reminds one of a Leaf joke, and the Leaf joke goes like this. The Leafs look really good until they hit the ice. They're like, what was that ship that got sunk? The DiCaprio movie? What? Yeah, they look as good as the Titanic until they hit the ice. So there was some really bad football in the CIS, which brings to me the question. You know, these games are going to be broadcast on television. maybe there should be the Division I, Division II type thing going on in Canadian college football. It can't be pretty to sit there and you know, watch that kind of stuff. Now, I say this before people start thinking that I'm running the CIS. I'm not running the CIS. By that, I mean I'm not running them down. Obviously, I'm not running them because there'd be Division I, Division II school. This is tough. It's tough to convince people to go out and watch the game with that kind of obvious separation in talent between two teams. It's going to, our guest tonight is going to be promoting. Here he is right here right now. Let's bring him in. He's going to be promoting the fact that the CIS is a great league, great history. Vanier Cup this year for the first time is going to be played on its own. No crutch with the CFL's Grey Cup. They'll be alone in Laval. And here he is, our guest, Donovan Bennett of Sportsnet 360. Welcome, sir.
Thank you for having me.
I hope that, you know, this is a bad week for you and I to talk about the CIS. It was a tough week, was it not?
Yeah, it was. And, I mean, it's a bit of an anomaly because only one conference was really in play as far as regular season games go. And, you know, slated early, you had, you know, some of the bigger heavyweights in the conference matched up with some of the teams who've made vast improvements but are still not there. And I think what you saw more than anything was how big training camp is for those teams who are younger, those programs who are younger, and they're really building. Remember, in the OUA, because they have an 11th team with Carleton coming in, they're playing a week earlier, so that's less time for progression for those young players and those young programs. And also, training camp went from 14 days to 10 days. So you saw the veteran teams with a lot of fifth-year seniors like Queens, like McMaster, like Western, really having their way with the programs who are trying to close the gap, but they're doing that with younger players, hoping that they develop and that they bear that fruit in the years to come. So the scores were a bit lopsided, but I think that was a bit of an anomaly given the circumstances, not the level of play.
So what we're talking about then is, in fairness, is that the margin of difference was accentuated by the fact that the teams that are trying to get things going didn't have enough time to get it together. And of course, with football, once you dominate, you know, if you can't come up with a countermeasure, you see what we saw this week.
Right, there's no question. And I mean, this was a year where people said that the discrepancy between the top and the bottom was supposed to be closing. So then, as you alluded to before I came on, when you see those scores, it's a little bit disparaging, and you thought we would have some parity. But as the some of the weaker sisters in CIS for the last, you know, decade or so, the Albertas, the Mount A's, the Waterloos, and the Torontos, as they're taking things more seriously, they've got more resources, they've got more full-time coaches, they've got bigger support from not just the athletic departments but also from the university presidents. It's not like the teams at the top are also just staying afoot at the same place. We're seeing even more resources being put into the Laval program, which we didn't think was possible. We're seeing Guelph, who was probably in the middle of the pack, really accelerate things under the leadership of Stu Lang. You know, Western is looking to bring more full-time coaches on in the years to come, and they're fundraising to do just that. Blake Nill is bringing in more money with the Calgary alumni year in and year out. So it's not like the strong powers at the top of each independent conference are just sitting back and waiting for some of the weaker sisters to close the gap. They're actively working hard, and I think it comes from the top. Laval is the standard, and when it comes to CIS football and really CIS athletics, and they've made it very clear that if you aren't willing to compete, not just football-wise but fiscally, we're going to leave you in our wake. And the athletic departments across the country have a hard decision. Do we want to just be doing this for the sake of doing it, or do we want to do it at a high level? And with that comes cost, and with that comes effort. So some of the stronger programs are ramping up even more to try and stay, you know, within arm's reach of Laval.
Yeah, and it will be difficult. You know, we said we would discuss before the program scanning the conferences and how they work out. The top 10, with only, as you mentioned and as you alluded to, only one conference or whatever, OUA, in play. Laval is number one, Queens number two, Calgary number three, Western number four, Montreal five, McMaster six, Guelph seven, Sherbrooke eight, Saskatchewan 9, Manitoba 10. Do you see any surprises there and in the top 10 where they rank at this point early, Donovan?
No, not really any surprises. I think some people were, you know, a bit up in arms that there were four OUA teams, you know, in the top 10. I think, you know, often people think that the media coverage, because a lot of it comes out of Ontario, that's where the national networks are and the national newspapers are, they feel that there's a slant to Ontario. But when you really break the numbers down, four teams out of which is now 11 with Carleton joining, it is not really that much, not an overrepresentation when you think, you look at the Q, which is just next door to Ontario, they've got three teams, and that's a 16 conference. So I wasn't really surprised at how many teams Ontario got. I was a bit surprised that as down as the AUS has been, that they weren't represented more so by Acadia. I think Coach Cummins does a great job out there. I think they're going to be a strong program again. But it's just so hard to evaluate Acadia because their level of competition is really not that strong. So the only time you really get to evaluate them is when they cross over and they play the Quebec schools, which obviously hasn't happened just yet. Because just off of their interconference games alone, it's damned if you do, damned if you don't. If they win in a blowout, well, that's what they were supposed to do. Look how bad the rest of the AUS is. If they win in a close game, then, Acadia is clearly down. So if I was to be surprised by anything, it was that, Coach Cummins, given how strong his teams have been, you know, over the past couple of years, it didn't get, some higher recognition.
Yeah, the thing about, I didn't mean to sound like, I realize now it might have sounded like it's being harsh against the CIS, but I think it is important. And Donovan, you have to admit that with the levels of play by the team in the CIS, would it be that hard to division these guys out so that these teams out so that, you know, the teams that are trying to enter in and be a part of this great league, which the CIS is, this national pride, a way of working themselves in instead of, you know, basically throwing them to the wolves. That is, I hope you understand my position. It isn't.
Yeah, no,
I'm not making fun of the league. I'm seriously saying that there has to be a kind of blending taking place. You know, it's the great thing about the U.S. colleges is that, you know, if you're a Division II team and you play another Division II team, you know what you're up against. But it's kind of hard when you have teams with that much money, you mentioned, that much talent, you mentioned, and that much preparation, you mentioned again, for other organizations like U of T is trying to make a comeback, for example. And you really don't want to kill that comeback desire because it's, you know, because the team is getting creamed. You know what I mean? That's where I'm coming from. I just want to make that clear.
Yeah, no, it's a valid point. It's a good point. It's a point that people have made because when you look at the university intercollegiate experience for student athlete, and when I was playing, U of T was down worse than they are now, and you had at that point kids who had come through the program, who've graduated, done their time, and they hadn't won a game. So think about that going through your career and virtually not winning a game, not having any sort of success, albeit making the playoffs or any type of team goal that you'd start out with. That's not the experience that we want for our student athletes. We obviously want things to be competitive, but you know, no one's really gaining from that sort of experience. So it may be a tiered system where they're playing, opponents who are closer to their level would foster a better experience for that student athlete. But here is the big issue with that I don't think anyone has really been able to wrap their head around and find a cure for. Once you're in that Division II, You know, let's say it's like the Premiership where you're relegated and you can move up and move down. I just don't foresee a way that you're going to move out of that state to ever become again an elite Division One, so to speak, or elite team in the CIS, because the lifeblood of any football organization is recruiting. It's getting blue chip athletes into your program, and then it's up to you to develop them. Well, you're not going to get a blue chip athlete to come to your program when you're Division II. In Canada, we're fighting hard enough to keep our great football players in Canada from going to the NCAA. And in some cases, the NCAA is the proper choice and a great choice. But when you look at maybe going to a Division II, Division I AA, or Division III school, the experience, now that we have scholarships across the board, is probably better in Canada. And the education most certainly is better in Canada. I don't see a young man leaving his house and saying, I'm going to play a Division II for whoever it is, Waterloo or York or Mount A or Alberta or UBC, and not going and playing in one of the Tier 1 schools. So I think what ends up happening is you're exaggerating that problem even more so, where all the top recruits go to the elite schools, and all the leftover recruits go to the schools in Tier 2. I think now you have the chance to say to a kid, hey, listen, we're not very good right now, but you're going to come here, you're going to play right away, and if you come here, you can be part of the change that makes this program elite. You can go somewhere and be just another one of their great players in their history, or you can come here and be someone who's really fostered change at this institution. And I think we're seeing some kids buy into that. Obviously not enough for those teams to make a transition, but you look at Guelph, look at the things they've done with their uniforms and their facilities and their code of conduct and the way they're handling themselves. They went from a team that, you know, had three wins and was out of the playoffs, and now they were in the Yates Cup a year ago, and they had a great recruiting class again this year. You look at schools like Laval and Sherbrooke, who didn't have football programs, didn't have football alumni, but quickly turned their programs around to become elite because they recruited hard and because they put resources into their football programs, and they armed their coaches with the ability and the autonomy to put together a good infrastructure and a good staff. We'll see what happens at Carleton, but they've got a great coaching staff. They've got lots of resources, so they're on the right track so far. So it can be done. It's just whether or not people are willing to literally roll up their sleeves and work hard, but also roll up their sleeves and fundraise, either through the traditional way of getting money from alumni or having the university say, this is something that's important to us, it's a priority, we're going to back it and fund it 100%. So I think that there's two sides to that issue. It's a complex topic. It's one that's being discussed. And even from the top, some of the elite teams, I've talked to Coach Constantine at Laval about this, about, you know, the prospects of having an elite division where you have the top six schools, Calgary and Western and Laval and Mac and whoever else is up at that time, and they fly across the country and play each other. Would that not be better for those guys to really be pushing themselves, so now you're getting better, more competitive games, you're getting better TV numbers because the games are closer, those athletes are playing against better competition, so thus they have a better fighting chance when they try and make the CFL or even the NFL. And there's some merit to that as well, but it's not a foolproof system. I think we really need to have these discussions and vet the process to find out what works for the kids at the top and what works for kids at the bottom.
It doesn't have to, in my opinion. I think I agree with you for the most part. I agree with you with what you're saying. I think, though, that they still have to figure out a way to soften entrance into the elite for teams, even if it's the way they schedule. And what I'm referring to, there's not enough teams to really have a U.S. version or as you mentioned, the football soccer version of Division I, Division II. I'm referring more or less to where you almost have two seasons in one season, where you start off with you have the teams at the beginning of the season. It becomes more like a progression where you have the teams at the beginning of the season play each other with teams that are of the same caliber and see which teams, almost like a playoff, almost when you come out of the gate, to give a motivation to those lower teams. As you said, and I believe in what you said, when I was covering, when I was doing play-by-play of OUAA football years ago, you know, I did it for about 20 years, and the biggest thing that was impacting me was the fact that you had teams that were not motivated by virtue of their inability to win. Now, that doesn't mean that I'm saying that was an obvious lack of motivation, but there is a desire to win and there is a desire to compete. And what I'm looking for as a fan of the CIS, a longtime fan, is competition and somehow how to enhance that. And the simplest way to say is Division One, Division Two, when really that's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is starting the season on a more competitive level and then seeing what teams are making that progress and then have them start to play, schedule the first half of the season in a way that helps promote victories, as you said, for the teams that are of lesser history, if you will, and then have them sort of play the tougher teams. And the teams on top who maybe shouldn't be there, you don't necessarily drop them, but you have them play against other teams. Essentially, in the CIS, really, there's a lot of, I don't think really wins and losses are as important as some may think. There are reputations that put, as you said, and as we look at the top 10, it's more about people like you who understand the game and who help judge which teams are better and the top 10. They establish themselves I don't want to say without playing, but the games are important, but they're not the whole reason why a team is ranked high. You know, professionals, the people who understand the game, the people who love the CIS, who are involved in it, can help, arrange to have schedules made that are more productive for players and teams to be progressive and progress like they should. In my opinion, when it comes to educational, places like, university and college that offer sports, because essentially that's what these people are doing. They're students. And yes, they do hope to in the future play CFL, but the majority of them aren't. The majority of them are living in experience. I got a daughter going to college. The education part's really important, but it's also what happens after school that's important. And I think enhancing that experience, like you said, is a great way to give people good memories.
Yeah, well, I mean, I couldn't agree more. I'm a living testament of that. Everything that's good in my life has come from the game of football, including my present occupation. And, no doubt I can only attribute that to having played, at the intercollegiate level in Canada. And as far as letting the schedule kind of dictate who plays who and when based on, strength, there's some merit to that, and I know that Brian Crawford at the OUA, who does the schedule, looks very hard into kind of making sure that the schedule makes sense for everybody, and maybe as you proposed, having some of the weaker teams play each other early, and then playing the stronger teams later in the season, kind of building up as they get stronger. The people on the flip side to that would say, football is a war of attrition. And, some of the younger teams that kind of don't have the depth in numbers, but also in strength, their injuries kind of pick them off later in the year. And as a strong team, I'd rather face, look at Carleton, for example, who's going to dress probably 70 guys this year because it's their first year back. Well, when you've got 5-10 injuries, now you're looking at, practicing with 60, 55 guys, and when you're looking at giving reps to everyone and having a scout team, it hurts how you practice, how you perform. There are some coaches from the stronger teams who will tell you, I'd rather play a weaker team late in the season than early in the season. Early in the season, they're fresh, everyone's relatively healthy. Late in the season, that war of attrition actually hurts the weaker teams more so than the stronger established teams who have more depth. And if I play a weaker team late in the schedule, it's virtually a bye week without having a bye. I can look at the plus minus as far as where I'm going to be in the standings. I can score as many points as I need to comfortably, and then I can get my starters out of there, keep them rested, and look at kind of my depth players and give them a chance to earn a roster spot and make the bus, so to speak, as we move into the playoffs. So, again, there's definitely two minds of thought on that issue, and I think the next You know, 2 to 3 years is going to be really telling in the CAS because, again, you have more ADs who are aggressive and more presidents who say, we want the positive feedback and fanfare from having a proficient football team. And you have some strong powerhouses with a long history of success who are not just going to, you know, stop working hard. And, you know, last year, back-to-back years, we had four teams represent their conferences in the bowls: Acadia, McMaster, Laval, and Calgary. As I look at the landscape this year, Acadia is the favorite out east by far. Laval is always the favorite out of Quebec. Calgary, by far, the favorite out of the Can-West. And McMaster is definitely in the conversation to come out of the OUA with Queens, with Guelph, and with Western. You can virtually pick a name out of the hat of those four, and that's who's going to be representing Ontario in the bowls. So for the most part, for the last 3 years, we're going to have the same teams representing their conferences, and we may have that for the foreseeable future. So it'll be really interesting to see 2, 3, 4 years in if the results on the field remain relatively the same as far as who has a lock hold on football in the respective conferences, whether or not there are some institutions who just throw up their hands and say, you know what, we've got no chance at this point, or who some become even more aggressive in trying to close that gap with the strong powers around the country.
You know, in sports, and we're going to move on to the players, but I guess I want to add to what you just said. And the motivation for teams, the big motivator is going to be if a team sneaks in there that wasn't in there, will help motivate the other teams that are in the same position as that team. Just a little bit of a surprise team in there will help give confidence and motivation maybe to the other team. As you know, in all sports, when a team that doesn't, like, how many times did we see in Major League Baseball, the Minnesota Twins, they won a World Series. The Kansas City Royals won a World Series. In past years, Oakland has played well. And these are all teams that aren't high-profile teams. And it does give the other teams hope, other than the Yankees, the Red Sox, et cetera. So, you know, that's what I hope for. I hope some of this progress that you seem to have hinted at does take place. Now, no progress on a team is going to happen unless you have the players. I had a good opportunity to speak to a real good prospect at quarterback, something that's really difficult. I'll start by mentioning William Finch at Western. This kid came out of high school last year, trained with Hamilton, the Tiger Cats. This year, I met him at the Argo training camp. He trained with them this year, his first year at Western, his first year as not a rookie, if you will. At the end of last year, he had an opportunity to show what he could do, and he showed some really good stuff. Really great quarterback. Today he ran for, not today, but this week he ran for a TD. You know, great quarterback. First, William Finch, and any other players that we should be looking at this year?
Well, I mean, you hit the nail on the head with Will Finch. He's kind of the prodigy as far as Canadian quarterbacks go. He's the next in the line of great ones coming out of the OUA, and I was actually up in London doing a feature on him and talking to him. I'm so impressed with not just his ability, but his aptitude. We watched film, and, you know, just as a youngster, you know, he's still able to tell me all his reads, his sight adjustments, his route concepts, what he's looking for, you know, what shade he's looking for, what he's calling at the line, what he's thinking when he goes through his progression. And he's doing this, you know, fluently, as if it's just a second language to him. Never mind, you know, when I was playing, he would be a true freshman because, you know, there was OAC back then. Now this is a guy on the big stage running a very complicated offense, which is Greg Marshall's offense, and they've put even more concepts in it now that he's at the helm at quarterback. And his aptitude, but also his poise when playing, is just remarkable. I remember talking to Mike Folds, who's a good friend of mine, played with him for a long time, and he's now the head coach at Laurier, and obviously he was a good quarterback himself, the all-time leading passer in CIS history, about Will Finch. When Will Finch was in high school and he was being recruited by everyone in the country and many people south of the border, and Mike Folds said something to me that I never forget. He said, he can be better than I am. And that didn't strike me because it's preposterous that someone could come along and be better than Mike Folds. That's what sports is. You know, you set the standard and someone comes along and does something great. And we saw Kyle Quinlan, you know, raise that bar after Sinopoli and Folds and so on and so forth. What struck me was that Mike Folds is a very confident guy. And for him to say that, to vocalize that about a high school athlete, to me said that this guy is special. And he led Team Canada when there were two CIS current players, Jesse Mills and Drew Burkle, on the roster. He was the guy in big moments who was leading the Team Canada junior team, and he was 17 years of age at that time. So that tells you how good he's been for such a long time. And when I see this guy making some throws that I don't think it's hyperbole to say they're NFL-level throws, not CFL, NFL-level throws. The tight windows he's able to put balls into is just remarkable. Now, at the same time, there's a lot of throws that when he puts on the film, he's the first to say, oh, I want that one back, I want that one back. When guys are wide open, you couldn't draw it up for them to be any more open, and he misses them. And it's obviously not about the ability, because he has the ability. It's just about the repetition of doing it time in and time out. And that consistency is what takes you from a very good player to a great player. And I think there's no question he's going to be a great player, but you learn by doing and getting those reps. You know, we'll just see how long it takes him to get to that point. But the ability is off the charts. The poise in the pocket is off the charts. And just watching him play, his mannerisms, he's a mixture of kind of Mike Folds, big and ability to run, and the way he drops back, but his poise and never getting flustered is very much like Ben Schaftling, two quarterbacks that Greg Marshall had and did very well with, and I expect nothing less from Will Finch. So, and he's the guy in Ontario, I say, is a guy to really to watch. There's so many great players, you know, in that conference. Billy McPhee is another prime quarterback who people are wondering, can he make the next step and play professionally? His arm is certainly strong enough. You know, his running mate, Giovanni Aprile, you know, had more offensive yards to his name than a couple CIS teams had total this weekend. He's such an explosive athlete. It looks like men against boys when he's playing. So he's obviously the guy in the backfield with Will Finch, Garrett Sanvito, such a smooth, talented athlete. And, you know, I expect him to rush for over 1,000 yards again. And that's just in Ontario. When you look out into Quebec, you know, Jeremy, the quarterback at Sherbrooke, his fundamentals are so flawless. And, you know, he's the guy out of Quebec that everyone has been watching since he was a high schooler and wondering, you know, what type of numbers he can put up at the CIS level. And he played all the way through as a freshman. Will Finch came in kind of towards the end of the year as Donnie Marshall got hurt. So he's a special quarterback as well. And, you know, Sene, the running back at Montreal, is just a load, just a bruiser, constantly carrying two or three would-be tacklers and falling forward for extra yardage. He's now back, and he's healthy. He was banged up towards the end of last year, so I expect him to have a big year next year. Out east, Acadia, you know, has so many talented, explosive athletes. It's almost like, you know, Coach Cummins, who's an Oregon grad, is trying to bring, you know, Oregon north and having so many fast guys all over the field. Renault, the receiver, you know, and also a good guy on special teams. He's the guy to watch out there. And it will be interesting, actually, to see the quarterback battle at St. Mary's between Jack Creighton, between Ben Rossong. And Rossong, a local product who tried his trade in Western, and obviously was behind Donnie Marshall, and then, you know, Will Finch was coming to town, so he transferred, and he's a real good you know, prospect and had a great highlight tape coming out of high school. He's looking to really supplant himself, but a former starter on that team, Jack Creighton, a guy who started in the Vanier Cup, he's coming back after he had a very scary injury last year and actually broke his neck, and that would drive a lot of people from football. He says he's got some more football in him, and he's got a clean bill of health, so he's going to try it once again. So the quarterback battle at St. Mary's will be very interesting, because they've got so many explosive athletes that all they need to do is get them the ball. And Perry Marchese, their head coach and who runs their offense, has some expansive ways to get his athletes in space. So they're a team to watch if they can get some consistent quarterback play. And then out west, you know, Calgary, they lose a lot of good players, but one guy who didn't really feature for them last year, who I'm really excited to watch, is Mercer Timmins. When you lose a guy like Stephen Lombala, who's now playing in the CFL, and he's probably, you know, one of the best backs in the history of your program, which says a lot. It's next up for Calgary, and Mercer Timmins was a big recruit, could have stayed home in Ontario, and lots of people thought he was going to go to Mac. He went to Calgary, and in some spot duty, he was really exciting to watch. So I'm interested to see how he handles the role of being the every down back and how he manages to go through a season. But, you know, Calgary just continues to put backs in the CFL, and then it's next man up, and the next guy does a job for them. And then with Regina, their quarterback battles, you've got Shutter, the transfer, Regina, born and bred, but actually his family moved to Hawaii and was playing at Hawaii. And if you know Hawaii football and the NCAA, they love to sling the rock. He's very good. And then huge recruit, Noah Pickton, you know, if I could describe him stylistically as like a player, it would kind of be like Johnny Manziel, a smaller guy with a big arm that likes to run around and make plays. You know, he was 12 for 12 in their preseason scrimmage, and he was actually working out with the team last year as he graduated early and started to get a head start. So who ends up being the leader of that football team as far as the quarterback and touching the ball every single play will be interesting. But whoever it is, I expect to have a big year given how well they throw the ball at Regina. So, yeah, there's a lot of really good, you know, offensive guys all over the country. And obviously you can tell I'm an offensive guy because everyone I mentioned was on the offensive side of the ball.
Well, I wasn't offended by anything you said. Okay. So we started by talking about Will Finch, and the one thing I'd like to mention, and my hope is as a fan, and I think there's a reality to this. We in Canada have provided some excellent talent in North American big league sports. You have Joey Votto in baseball, and we can go on with in baseball. How many great Canadian MVPs there have been in baseball, basketball? Now we are starting to be a big part of the NBA this year, the number one draft pick from Brampton, and they're talking Wiggins next year, top draft pick. You know, we're talking, of course, hockey. I mean, what can you say about hockey, right? Now, the only sport that we haven't had some real, you know, some traction when it comes to great players is football in the U.S., and when you were talking about Finch, it appears to me, and when I talked to his father, it wouldn't surprise me if he might be the first great Canadian, ironically, and this is a part that I consider very ironic, wouldn't it be ironic, and I don't want to put too much pressure on this young lad, he's a good kid, but can you imagine if the first Canadian player to play at a level that is, you know, top-notch in the NFL is that quarterback? Wouldn't that be ironic?
Yeah, I mean, and we've made great strides in those other sports. And a lot of, you know, the guys you mentioned, whether it's Anthony Bennett or Wiggins, you know, they had to go and play high school in the U.S. to get that formal training. And I think that's the biggest difference as far as our Canadian players. Because, you know, you had Vaughn Martin drafted early in the NFL draft, and he's now on his second contract in the NFL. We've got, you know, a plethora of linemen playing in the NFL, and obviously Jesse Palmer had a stint playing quarterback in the NFL. The thing with quarterbacks specifically is that the American quarterbacks, they get so many more reps. You've got, you know, your spring ball, you've obviously got your season, you know, they've got so many throwing camps and passing academies, you've got, you know, 7-on-7 ball, which is big in places like Texas and California, which is just, you know, it's virtually, you know, flag football on steroids, and with the concepts and the way football is going, and people are now throwing the football to run it rather than running it to throw it, they're just getting so many more reps throwing the football. Now, with our kids coming up, you're seeing kids who are playing high school football, and they're also playing rep football in the summer, where, you know, historically in Canada, it was one or the other. If your high school team was pretty good, you concentrate on high school. If your rep team was pretty strong, then that was your focus if you didn't go to a high school where football was a big deal. Now many kids are doing both, and even if they're not getting a lot of reps once they get to college, sometimes they're still playing football outside of their institution of higher learning. They're doing it on their own, you know, in the summers. So as our passers get more and more reps, and, you know, I think, you know, Damon Allen does a great job with his passing academy. As we get more passing academies up north, and they get more great tutelage from people who have plied the trade at a high level. And also, you talked about it earlier, what happens when people start to see success. When they start to see success, when our great athletes say, you know what, I don't have to become a receiver to make it to the CFL or to the NFL. I don't have to become a DB or running back. I can do it as a quarterback. And when you have the best athlete on the field and the smartest athlete on the field playing quarterback, that's a dangerous combination. You know, I think Will Finch, in many cases, is that guy. So whether or not it is him, whether or not he's that guy, we'll see. But I think the movement, as far as the amount of repetitions our guys are getting, the amount of hours, and I don't want to sound like Malcolm Gladwell, but the amount of hours that you put in, that 1,000-hour rule to becoming excellent at something, will put us in a better position to, you know, to knock down that door, so that you maybe you do see a Canadian passer on Monday Night Football in the years to come.
Yeah, and it doesn't necessarily just have to be. I was just the irony of it being a quarterback, because quarterbacks can't seem to cut it, Canadian ones anyway, in the CFL. You know, we have changed, for those that watch football closely enough, a lot of the talented positions are being played by Canadians. For those of us that sit here in Toronto, Andre Drury is doing a great job as a Canadian in a position that maybe a couple of years ago a Canadian might not have been, you know, slotted for. We've got running backs now that are running in the CFL and running John Cornish, MVP. What else do you want to hear? So, you know, Canadian football is well on the way to doing some great things. And you guys are going to do great things for the CIS at Sportsnet. You're going to be broadcasting, I guess, 11 games or something like that, or 21 games. I'm sorry, I don't remember exactly how many. But Sportsnet 360 will be broadcasting CIS football. Tell us about it, and tell us about your contribution to CIS football on the airwaves.
Yeah, it's exciting. So, you know, Sportsnet obviously taking over, you know, the scores coverage, and they've really kind of expanded it. And, you know, it should be a great home and a great platform for not just football, but for all CIS sports. But obviously football is that driver. So we're doing the OUA season starting in week 3 with the matchup of two ranked teams, Western at McMaster, as Greg Marshall takes the Mustangs back to a place he knows well, obviously, in McMaster. And McMaster ended Western season a year ago, so that one should be a very, very good contest. And we go right through the OUA regular season until the Yates Cup, and then we find out who's going to be hoisting North America's oldest football trophy. So we've got the Yates Cup coverage, and as the season kind of winds down, you know, you may see some more coverages with us as far as right on campus having a pregame show and things like that. So that'll also be nice. And then we're going to take the coverage a little bit further this year, all the way into the bowl games, doing both the national semifinal bowl games, and then obviously with the Vanier Cup out in Laval. And nobody puts on a better party as far as the Vanier Cup than Laval. And often it's because, you know, at the end of the party, they're the ones hosting it. But we want to be the host for CIS sports in this country. It's not just going to be the broadcast. You know, there's going to be an online presence as well. If you go to sportsnet.ca, there is a CIS section where you're going to see highlights. You're going to see reviews from each team, previews of the matchups coming up. I'm going to put up my top 10 vote there every week and give you a little synopsis of how I came to that vote. So I'm just opening myself up for more criticism, which is fine. I'm also going to be contributing, you know, a couple of my thoughts, a couple of articles and blog posts, and a breakdown of the matchup that we have on the air that week. So you can go to sportsnet.ca/CIS for all of our CIS coverage starting in the football season and then moving on. And then the other thing you're going to see is some of the features that I'm doing, and that's kind of my part of the coverage this year. Some of the interviews with the athletes athletes and with the coaches. They're not just going to play during the broadcast at halftime like they did in previous years. They're also going to be put up on the website on sportsnet.ca, and you're going to see them on our Connected show on the Friday leading into the game. So if you're watching Connected, whether it's on Sportsnet Ontario, Sportsnet Pacific, wherever you are, you're going to see that feature. So that's going to be a great platform to shine a light on some of these great athletes to some unique viewers who wouldn't have seen them before. So that's what you can expect from the coverage. The voice of the CIS, Tim McAuliffe, will be back doing the play-by-play in the booth. So I know a lot of CIS diehard fans are excited about that. I know Tim's energized and excited about being part of the coverage again because it's one of his passions. And we really look to expand on what we're doing this year in the years to come. You know, by the end of our deal, I think it's around 26 events we're covering. So you're looking at, you know, obviously men's and women's basketball, men's and women's hockey, and then branching out in the years to come once we get our feet wet and covering some of the periphery CIS sports as well. But you're going to get a bunch of championships definitely on our air, and the football season right through, you're going to get coverages from us and games on Sportsnet 360. So it's an exciting time at our place.
Donovan Bennett of Sportsnet 360. Now I want to ask you a favor, because I know from here you're going to go right to the Blue Jay Express show. Can you do me a favor?
Sure.
I've heard some things about, since your show was on the air there, the Blue Jays Express, that the season's gone downhill for the Blue Jays.
Yeah.
You might not mention it. Don't mention this show on your show, please. I don't have enough viewers and listeners as it is. I don't have enough listeners as it is. Don't hurt my numbers, man. No, just kidding. I read a little bit about you guys, and I thought it was very funny that someone tried, I forget who it was, but trying to derive some sort of correlation between the fact that you guys went to air I guess it was Canada Day, starting at Canada Day, and the Blue Jay fall commenced at that point. They're 37-63 or something in that stretch. I thought that was rather humorous. I wish you a lot of luck. You do a great job, and I appreciate it. Go ahead.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. And anytime, I'm game, and I love to talk about CIS football. These athletes are talented, they're dedicated, and they need more exposure. So thank you for doing what you're doing, and I'm looking forward to listening throughout the year.
Well, you're welcome. And trust me when I say this. We love the game, and, of course, it's a game that deserves to be loved. And I've always been enthralled by the fact that talented people like yourself move on to television, and you make that seamless move quite well. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. Much appreciated.
Donovan Bennett of Sportsnet 360. Thank you, sir, for coming on. And when we come back, I've got an interview with the kid that we talked about, William Finch. Why don't we go to that interview right now?
I had a chance to talk to your dad.
Oh yeah.
Right, you're a local boy. I'm just down the road too. So.
Oh yeah.
Burlington's it has a lot of notoriety when it comes to minor football, and that's where you came from. Tell us a little bit about the minor football experience for you.
It's been pretty good. I've played in the BMFA in the St. Peter program for I'd say 10, 11 years, maybe even more, and the coach is always good. They always develop their players. I know some people call Burlington like the, I don't know what the word is, but what they call it, but it's something
the
that,
hub of football.
The hub of football. And a lot of good guys come from there, and a lot of great people too. So it's kind of cool to be known or classified in that kind of area, I guess.
Yeah, and now you're here on an intern program. Please explain the intern.
They bring in a CAS quarterback to every one of the teams. I think they started it last year, I think. It's when we can come in and just learn from the other quarterbacks there. We don't get as many reps. We kind of more so watch rather than perform. But we get the indie period. We get the reps on air, all that stuff. And it's cool to be in the environment. You always pick up things you really didn't know. And it's just a fun time. It's just fun to relax.
I'm sure also, William, it helps you relax when you go to, or when you may come to this camp again, or for a different reason, more or less to make the team. So it's more of a, it helps you, you know, get the sharp edges off, you know, the nervousness and stuff.
Yeah, for sure. You kind of, you know what to expect. You can come in here and kind of, and you know, perform to your best ability, I guess, and not really kind of worried or nervous about what to expect. And I don't know. It's just a good experience overall. And it's a good thing to have.
What attracted you to playing football to begin with? Like, what was the big thrill of playing football?
I don't know. I think I started really young, and I think it'd be the backyard. My next door neighbors would always come over, and my dad would be out there, and we'd always be playing kill the carrier or whatever that is, and we just throw on the backyard and just make plays.
All right, and then you played in Burlington, and then you went to university, and you were down the road here, right?
Yep, and I'm in London.
In London.
Yep.
And what's that like, the experience there?
That's awesome. Coach Marshall's a great coach, and I've learned lots so far, and still more to come. So three or four more years, and it's just an awesome tradition school.
No worries.
Everything is there. It's awesome.
And the hope is by the time that you graduate and enter into the combine, if you will, maybe quarterbacks that are Canadian will have a better chance to make the team? Because right now they don't really have the best of chances to make the team, do they?
Yeah, I don't know. I think they're maybe not against it, but I know that it's hard to make it if you're a quarterback in Canada. And, that's one thing I want to, one of my goals is to kind of help pave the way or help keep that road going, because Quinlan's has his chance right now, and I hope he can kind of open the door. And it's great.
Well, good luck.
Thanks.
Wish you all the best. Your dad's a really good guy.
Oh, yeah. Kyle Quinlan retired, and here he is, 1 year, 2 years, trying to make it as a professional, as a CFL quarterback in Montreal. Retires and goes back to coach at his school a couple of years later. And, of course, Finch was referring to the team in London, which is Western, and they're ranked number 4 in the CIS right now. And, it's an important thing to remember. In college sports, it's not all about winning. It's about development as well. And the development of teams as well as players. And, there are a lot of teams that, well, let's be honest. We talked about the scores. There is a difference. There is a difference in talent, and it is difficult to improve. One of the teams that I guess was on the wrong end of a score, York. We had a chance to talk to Coach Craney back in a few months ago now, and I wanted to know about how York's looking this coming year in the CIS.
At the Argos training camp, bumped into Coach Craney, York University coach.
I wanted to talk to you about this program that the CIS and the CFL have of bringing in quarterbacks to train with the CFL team. I've heard that that's been a real rousing success.
Oh, without a doubt. I think it's great. Anytime we can, promote Canadian content, especially at the quarterback position, I think it's so beneficial for the Canadian game and for young Canadians, playing the quarterback position.
I can't imagine how frustrating it must be for the individual player who has aspirations of being a quarterback, but they're really into it. A tough battle, because it's not about talent, it's about training and experience, and the Canadian players just don't have the same amount as the American quarterbacks.
Yeah, it's definitely an issue. I think we're doing a better job. I know coaches, and I know Football Canada, they're putting a stronger emphasis on the position. One of the big things we found in some experience I have in the U.S., one of the big differences of that position is the sport of baseball. A lot of quarterbacks in the U.S. grow up 2 years old learning how to throw a baseball. And, it's the throwing sport and that throwing motion that further enhances their training capability. So, but again, I think Football Canada has addressed it, and I think they're doing the best they can in order to rectify that situation.
Let's switch gears now. Let's talk about your team. What do we have to look forward to with the York team?
You got a lot to look forward to. It's, this is the first year where it's really my team. Everyone on that team is someone I recruited and brought into the program, so I'm very excited about that. I think we're going to be a competitive thing, a very competitive team, and our only nemesis this year is going to be youth, and that's not a bad thing, I think.
Well, you have to build from that, don't you?
You have to build from that, yep.
Experience only comes with experience.
Exactly, and we're going to get a lot of that this year. We were a very young team last year, did some great things, finishing, third in the OUA in offense. Defense, we got to tighten up a few things, very tough schedule this year, but we're excited for that. That's how we're going to get better, is by playing the better teams.
Well, congratulations on having all the players you want.
I hope
they develop at a speed and a rate of speed that you can live with.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Well, now, are you sure there's any fish in here at all? because we haven't latched into one today yet.
Tired of sitting on the sidelines? Want to be part of the game?
Be official. Be radical.
The CFL is back and more radical than ever. The action never stops. It's hard-hitting, high-scoring football. Get in the game. Wear the attitude.
Come on, go, go, go. Woo! Be official. Be radical. CFL football. Get in the game.
You have a little popcorn?
We have to give you equal time, of course. That is, of course, on TSN, the Toronto Sports Network. No, wait a minute. That's the Sports Network. I'm just making fun of what Donovan said. And when I say Donovan, I mean Donovan Bennett. And not to be confused with Donovan Carter. More CIS talk. This is Donovan Carter. Again, spoke to him a little while ago talking about the future in the CIS.
Donovan Carter, former first-round draft choice of the Toronto Argonauts, defensive coach for the University of Toronto Blues, will be more than just a football coach for the University of Windsor Lancers. At the ripe old age of 37, Carter, who spent the past four seasons as the defensive coordinator at the University of Toronto, is the Lancers' new full-time associate head coach and defensive coordinator. Along with his duties, Coach Carter will also be required to teach, come up with fundraising initiatives for the football program, as well as handle recruiting for the team. This role progresses my career, said Carter, who was the fourth overall pick in the 2000 Canadian Football League draft and spent seven seasons in the league playing linebacker and safety for the Toronto Argonauts, Ottawa, Hamilton, and Winnipeg. There's other parts and contributions I would like to make. Lancers head coach Joe DeMore said there were 30 applicants for the job, but Carter's coaching background and roots in the Toronto area set him apart. While the Varsity Blues have struggled in the win column in recent years, Carter's defense has made an impact. 2 years ago, Toronto had the number one pass defense despite being 2-6, Carter reminded us. Carter, who is from Brampton, also served as a defensive coordinator with the Etobicoke of the Ontario Varsity Football League. It's a tough area for us to recruit and creates a lot of challenges, DeMore said of the GTA. He's concerned for the connection to the players in that area is big. While not deep in knowledge about the Windsor area school, he does know a graduate of that school, his brother Michael, who received a Bachelor of Commerce degree. Windsor coach DeMore said that with seven CFL seasons under his belt, speaking of Carter, and 4 years coaching at the CIS level, again, Carter, has nothing to prove to his players. Donovan not only has experience running a defense at the CIS level, but his extensive playing career in the CFL gives him instant credibility with our players, DeMore said. He brings a sound defensive system that will allow our players to play fast and adapt quickly. Windsor and Carter will blend well in the city of hard work. I want my defense known for hard work, Carter said. Bring your hard hat. Be physical and aggressive to the ball. Improving on back-to-back playoff appearances will be Carter's leadership goal, and taking another step the OUAA football standings is his aim. There's a lot of great athletes here, Carter said. I'm going to promote competition. I want the guys to embrace that. I think that will help us. That kind of makes bad teams good teams and good teams very good teams if you have a great competition in there and make tough decisions for the coaching staff. I ran into Donovan Carter at the Argo training facility, and this is what we talked about.
CIS has a program where they're developing quarterbacks. Can you give us your opinion on how that's working and what you see that doing in the future for football, for Canadian quarterbacks?
I think it's a great opportunity to get kids exposure to come out to camp and get the type of coaching they do. You know, the issue is, do we have enough coaches, capable quarterbacks to get to all the CFL camps and, you know, take advantage of that type of opportunity? You know, but I think it's great for the game. You know, will it lead to a quarterback? That would be the hope, and that would be something I would look forward to seeing.
It doesn't hurt to give the quarterbacks an opportunity to develop. The one problem that Canadian quarterbacks have is that they don't come out of, you know, the kind of training that American quarterbacks go through. In a way, what you're doing here is, I guess, at least the CIS is doing, is trying to introduce the quarterbacks to let them know there might be a future. They get a chance to develop. Where what we have now is we have a ceiling that happens. It's no fault of anybody in particular. It just means we've got to work harder, I guess, to create quarterbacks and give them the confidence that there's a job waiting for them at some point.
Yeah, no question, because you know what? They get coached so well from a young age in the U.S., and there's definitely a catching up that needs to be done at that position. That would be, I mean, like I said, I think there's a lot of good young quarterbacks with the ability of playing our game. I think that's their advantage, learning our game from a young age, the wider field. And now let's see if we can give them the tools to take advantage of that.
And know what they need to do, right?
Yeah.
Let's talk about Windsor. Mm-hmm. You know, Canadian college football sometimes seems to be, four or five teams basically overpower the rest.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see in the future where there might be a little more of a balanced situation, and or what do we need to create that, or to, you know, create an atmosphere of a more competitive side in the CIS?
I think it's well on the way. I think a lot of the teams that were traditionally at the bottom of the division, particularly in the OUA, have definitely closed that gap. So it has to happen with recruiting and the resources that each program has. And that's what, like you said, the strong has stayed strong because they've been able to keep a lot of the top recruits. But now with more balance, good coaching, going to different schools, I think some of the prospects coming out are going and making up different choices than they did in the past, and not just going to this program that's at the top of the division. So, with that and with Windsor. Windsor's done a good job now of getting into the playoffs for the last few years, and, you know, I've been brought over there to see if I can help them take the next step and start to contend with some of the perennial powerhouses in our division and across the country.
Tell me about where your team's at and where you see the progress specifically on your team.
A lot of good kids out there. Great talent pool in the Windsor area. The offense has done exceptionally well over the past few years, with Joe going in there and solidifying that with recruiting as well. My hope is to come in there and bring that structure to the defensive side and see if we can get them competing as well as they're doing on the offense, on defense there. You know, they have the personnel, and it's for me to just put a system so the kids, you know, fly around and make plays on defense.
How about a couple of names that we should be looking out for? A
couple of names. We got a good disruptive DN. I'm going to be defensive biased a little bit, but I'll say a couple offensive guys. I like Ty Pham, a good guy up front. He went to the East-West for our team and represented us well. Josh Burns, I think, is a guy who you could look to be drafted next year, a secondary, a free safety, you know, has the speed to be a guy that American coaches here in the CFL will look at that position. We think that we have the best quarterback now that Quinlan's moved on with Kennedy at the quarterback spot. He's the leader of our team, so... A lot of explosive guys,
A lot of explosiveness on that team for sure. I'm sure Donovan will ignite that explosiveness.
Yep. And it really is, it may sound like I've got this thing about quarterbacks in the CFL. And, playing in CIS. It's just that, it is the Hollywood position, and to not have a Canadian in that, and in quotations, Hollywood position, it's not shameful, but it's a shame, to say the least. It would be nice if it would change, and you know what, it will change. We just got to figure out how to make it work. To conclude this portion of the program and the CIS and the quarterback issue with kids like Will Finch, what has to happen is there has to be an opportunity for the quarterbacks somehow to be on the roster first and then given an opportunity to play, much like a Kolaris got with the Argos a couple of weeks back. And maybe they can show that they belong. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to change our focus from the CIS to the CFL. Travis Lule is a player whose reputation is taking a major hit this year. He's almost, 50% of touchdowns that he throws, he got 13 touchdowns and something like, so 16 touchdowns and 7 interceptions. The touchdown to, you know, to interception ratio is a little high. Has he peaked? Is he a quarterback that will be able to carry the BC Lions to victory? That's a good question. Right now, he's not being very successful, but he does have fans, and those fans are justified to be fans for him.
Travis.
Travis Lulé.
He's awesome.
Yeah, I love this guy.
He's real.
You know you like him.
Loves the outdoors.
He's out there, all out, every game.
You gotta like that.
Look at him.
Always looking to land the big catch.
He's accurate.
Articulate.
He's a winner.
Champion.
He's got a great cup.
He's the real deal.
Yeah, you gotta love this guy.
CFL on TSN. You need to see these guys play.
Don't forget, Mike Richards in the morning, TSN 1050. We talk about BC, and of course, in BC, they had the White Ribbon. Was it the White Ribbon campaign that they've introduced now here in Toronto? It's violence against women. We all know that in the Canadian Football League, the players and the teams in the CFL work very diligently in the community to try as hard as they can to be a positive impact on the community. It's no doubt that the biggest reason is that a lot of these teams have their roots in community. The teams themselves are community teams. They're teams that are owned by people in the community. Look at Saskatchewan. Look at Calgary. Look at Edmonton, look at Hamilton, look at here in Toronto as well, Winnipeg, Montreal, wherever you go in the CFL, the players are down to earth and they're here. They're here for you to enjoy, not only as players and entertainers, but also as members of the community. So let's take another break and for our Edmonton fans, because I feel so sensitive about our Edmonton fans.
Bring your passion, bring your pride. Together we will stand. It's one united, unstoppable, undeniable, home field advantage. We are the Eskimo Empire.
Are you in?
Are you in? Now, a lot of big noise being made here in the Metro Toronto areas with the Ricky Ray situation. Will he play or won't he play? I told you last week, and I'll tell you again. He will be playing. For goodness sake, he wasn't even bandaged. I think he was more hurt by the way the Argos played against Calgary emotionally than he was physically. But that right shoulder is connected to that right arm, And at 78% clip that he's passing with no knock on wood interceptions, of course they sat him out. So, enough about Ricky Ray. He will be there. He will be calling the play. Don't worry, Argo fans. Please. Holy crap. Unbelievable. I mean, well, I talked about Lule. And so just to, you know, I went over on the CFL webpage and I noticed that the writers have had their opinion on the players and how they're doing. And at quarterback, these affable, not laughable, these affable writers, 12 of them? No, I can't even count, Frank. It's 10. Oh, so we have 10 writers. And this is how they felt about the quarterback position. It doesn't matter which guy said what, because that's not what's important. What's important is it was Durant, Ray, Durant, Ray, Ray, Durant, Durant, Ray, Ray, Ray. Well, that sounds like a song, doesn't it? Durant, Ray, Durant, Ray, Ray, Durant, Durant, Ray, Ray, Ray. Yeah, sounds like that. Yeah. And then there was this one that sounded like a Rihanna song. Sheets for running back, the 10 guys. Sheets, 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 sheets. Now, I don't know if you're a Rihanna fan. You'll understand why I said that. Another position, running back, that was pretty unanimous, but not as reanimous, if I can say that, as Cornish, 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 Harris, Cornish, Cornish, Cornish. And that's how those 10 votes went. For a wide receiver, we had Green, Green, Owen, Stamps, Stamps, Dressler, Stamps, 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 Stamps. That sounds more like a country and western line dance. Wide receiver, here we go again. Stamps, Owens, Stamps, Owens, Owens, Getzlaff, Green, Owens, Dressler, Green. Wide receiver, Ellingson, Dressler, Green, Dressler, Dressler, Stamps, Ellingson, Green, Owens, Owens. Wide receiver, Owens, Stamps, Dressler, Ellingson, Green, Lewis, Owens, Dressler, Green, Dressler. So far, do you disagree with anything that they've said? Well, I mean, are there any names being left out? I'm not sure there are. So, and then you got Fulton, Bryant, Heenan, Fulton, Olafoy, Olafoy, Olafiol, Olafoy, Fulton, Bryant, Olafiol. And then, these are tackles, right? Olafier, Brennan, Bryant, Olafier, Fulton, Fulton, Figueroa, Bryant, Heenan, Archibald. At guard, Tsumpas, Labatt, Tsumpas, Van Ziel, Labatt, Tsumpas, Van Ziel, Labatt, Van Ziel, Tsumpas. The other guard, and the two guards, just like the two tackles. Best, Van Ziel. Labatt, Labatt, Van Ziel. Labatt, Labatt, best. Labatt, best. At center, Picard, Picard, keeping. Jones, Picard, 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 Jones, Picard, Jones. And that is the offense. Let's move over to the defense, because the defense matters, doesn't it? Defensive end. Hall, 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 Hughes, Hughes, Hall, Hughes, Hall, Hall. Defensive end. Bowman, Hughes, 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 Hall, Chick. That's right, Chick. Willis, Hall, Hughes, Hughes. Defensive tackle. Bolden, George, Taylor, Taylor, Toomer, Sewell, Shulagan, Sewell, Law, and Bowman. Another defensive tackle. Shulagan, Taylor, Bolden, Mitchell, Sewell, George, Mitchell, Shulagan, George, Bolden. And at linebacker, two rows of these guys, too. Williams, Cox, Eliminian. Raymond, Cox, Eliminian, Cox, Williams, Cox, 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 Munoz, Cox, Eliminian, Eliminian, Munoz, Lillian, Herbert, McCune. Cornerback. Watkins, Parks, Lawrence, Watkins, Phillips, Anderson, Marsh, Anderson. Second row. Marsh, Banks, Marsh, Bennett, Banks, Parks, Phillips, Wall, Banks. Defensive back. Smith, Raymond, Anderson, Webb, Anderson, Bennett, Marsh, Parks, Watkins. Anderson, Wall, Ebert, Anderson, By Parker, Thompson, Anderson, Parks. And safety, Hebert, Brackenridge, Hebert, Brackenridge, Edom and Smith. Special teams, Schmidt, Renault, Mayer, Eaker. Parodies. Kick returner. Good. I'm looking right to the end. Brown, Taylor, Owen. So, that is how they voted. I don't know if you have any differences of opinion. Now, should we talk about last week's game? You don't want to bring up last week's game. Or should we talk about next week's game? Okay. The Felines are playing this week in BC. That would be the Tiger Cats and the Lions. Tiger Cats are going to go above 500. They are going to beat the other Pussycats, the BC Lions. That's my opinion. The Winnipeg Blue Bombers are up against Saskatchewan. Well, you know, Winnipeg hasn't shown very much life, and I sure hope this is the week that they show some life. I'm not sure that they'll win, but they will show some life. Oh, and by the way, Frank, and let's see, Edmonton, Calgary, and Montreal, and Toronto. So what we should do at this point is bring in our buddy, the Bieber that isn't Justin. And I don't know why I'm not able to dial out. We'll find out. I'm going to keep trying until I can get our other Bieber on the program. Now, that's a funny sound coming from your computer there, young lady. Is that what that is? Oh, okay. All right, so here we go. All right, let's give it another try. I'm going to make this work whether I like it or not. Let's see now. Tyler, get ready. Mr. Bieber's up next. And maybe he has some opinions on some of the votes.
Hello, you have reached Tyler. I am not available at this moment, but if you leave your name, number, and message, I will get back to you as soon as possible. Thank you.
Hi, Tyler. Yeah, it's Frank, Candid Frank Live. You didn't answer the phone. So I guess first the phone couldn't call out, and now your phone's not answering. And this is one way for you to listen to the show. You know, play it back later when you're ready off your answering machine. Listen, I'm here. If you're not doing anything special, I'll give you a try again. Maybe in 2 minutes, 3 minutes. Because if you're listening to the program, it's going to be funny for you, isn't it? It's funny for me. All right. Anyway, we'll give you a shot, buddy. We'll give you another call. He might be on the phone going, he's supposed to call me. He hasn't called me. Why hasn't he called me? And then he's going to find a message when he hangs up. So as I said, and I rushed through because it looked like I was getting the phone to work here. The Winnipeg Blue Bombers against the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. And, of course, the Winnipeg Blue Bombers have not had a very good year. You know, it's been one of those years, and unfortunately, it's been predictable. And that makes it worse because down deep, I'm sure the Winnipeg Blue Bomber fans knew that something silly might have happened this year. But they're in a rebuilding mode. They've, you know, replaced their CEO. The big guy has been replaced with a guy that understands the game of football maybe better. And hopefully that will be something really good that happens for Winnipeg in the second half of the season. Now, I predicted all along that the second half of the season is going to belong to Edmonton. Edmonton's going to have the better part of their year. I thought they'd be better than 1-7. They aren't, but not because they haven't played well. They just haven't played well enough. That has been the problem for them. Their issue isn't like Winnipeg's issue. Winnipeg looks a lot more in need of improvement. Now, this will be the week that Edmonton finally wins a football game. It will be against Calgary. Yes, the team that beat the Argos last week. And it will be because Edmonton finally catches a break. They have caught no breaks this year. It's been a difficult thing for them. They've had a hard time, and they deserve a break. The next game, and that is, of course, the Montreal game here in Toronto in September, and that would be this new month coming in. We're at the end of August, September 3rd, 7:30 p.m. I'll be there, and it is going to be a barn burner. And it will be a barn burner because Montreal has confidence now. The Argos, though, they have come off a loss against those Calgary Stampeders. And if they can't get up for this game, there's no hope for the Argos. So hopefully they'll be able to get up for this game as an Argo fan and be able to do something good this week. They haven't lost, I think they lost two in a row at the beginning of the season, haven't since. They won four in a row. So maybe they can get on another run, or they'll lose their second in a row. And you know what? Montreal can do it. If you're an Argo fan, be careful, because this Montreal team has turned things around. Jim Popp is an intelligent football mind, and you know, the way that defense is playing for Montreal, if the offense just makes a minor contribution and throws more touchdowns than interceptions. No, wait, I know, that's not going to be the last game. Okay, I shouldn't laugh, but to win that game against BC, main reason why I'm saying that the Ticats are going to beat BC, I just don't think that BC is a consistent enough football team right now. And they've been lucky to beat the Argos early in the season. And it isn't going to be something that BC fans are going to like hearing. Your team is, your quarterback is not having a good year. And the Hamilton Tiger Cats, who suffered early in the season, this could be two teams going in different directions. So good luck to both those teams. That really doesn't matter which team wins, as long as it's a good football game for the fans in BC. All right, we're going to take another break. And, well, maybe we'll play this because my buddy John loves this tune. The only reason.
I see a few pockets of people that ain't acting crazy. Because I'm here live.
Candid Frank Live.
About half of y'all motherfuckers on the hill are doing your thing. Are y'all ready to get live or what?
Candid Frank Live.
We gonna set this off right or what? It's Friday night. We'll see. I'm the cream of the crop, I rise to the top. Never eat a pig, gonna bring in the car. Gotta get a cup of nail, I'm gonna force the leg. Tryna pick me up just like my nigga. But I ain't going there like no one bitch.
Yes, jump up and get down. Well, while you were away, I gave it another shot, and I got the answering machine again. Tyler, don't call me Justin Bieber. All right, so we were talking about Montreal and the great game that they had, and that game was awesome. And Delorier caught a 57-yard desperation toss from Tanner Marsh, who I think threw three interceptions that game, wasn't it? Three interceptions. And what a game. I mean, that was the best game of the week. Unbelievable. Now, that catch, I don't think, was the best catch of the week. The best catch of the week, I'm sorry, you know, I should know which guy caught it for Calgary. But the one that bounced off the Argo player's head and then was caught in a long pass. It was another desperation throw that worked out well for the quarterback, in this case, the one in Calgary. I love those kind of plays. I don't know. Do you have any recollections? You know, it's that Franco Harris reception type stuff, you know, where in football the defender does everything he can, like the baseball outfielder tries to catch the ball. I remember Canseco, the ball bounced off his head over the outfield fence for a home run. Those are the kinds of things that are hard to overcome, and the look on the coaches when those catches are made are just awesome. They're just so memorable and a great opportunity to really enjoy, football at its best. The games that are played this week will be the second half of the season. And I don't know about you, but the teams that if you were to figure out which teams you think, right, are on their way, do you think all the teams that are playing well right now are going to play well throughout the season? In other words, those that have good records, like Saskatchewan, Calgary, BC, Toronto, now Hamilton at 4-4, and do you think these teams are going to consistently play well? And will those teams, Montreal can't be put in the same league as Winnipeg and Edmonton by virtue of the fact that they have three wins and Edmonton only has one, as Winnipeg only has one. I happen to think that Montreal's much better than their 3-5 record. They've had some tough breaks. They started out with a coach they shouldn't have had. I think the Eastern Division is going to get very, very, very interesting. And for those of you that follow the program, you know as well that the season for Edmonton, in my opinion, is going to begin to get very interesting as well. I see Edmonton by the end of the season, what is it, play 18 games? Or is it 16? No, I forgot. They're going to play 500 from here on in. That's what I'm saying. It won't be a great record at the end of the year, but only because of how badly they played early in the season. That's my prediction. Saskatchewan. Now, they're making some moves. They brought back... they're making some moves. And they're making those moves because they want to be perfect. And, Calgary is 6-2. Are they valuable? Their value, is it at 6-2? I guess so. You know, they're a good team. I happen to think that Calgary and Toronto have a lot in common. They're two teams that are very good, that if they aren't careful, they could get in trouble in the regular season. Saskatchewan is insulated by the fact that they have so much talent. Toronto and Calgary, on the other hand, just because you play well with the injuries that you had doesn't mean you're going to continue to play well. Injuries could become a factor for both those teams. And they both need to be careful. I've already spoken about BC. BC is a team that I think is going to be in tough. They will definitely be the visitor in the final in the West. I should say the semifinal in the West against Calgary or Saskatchewan, depending on how many injuries Calgary has. Without health, Saskatchewan. Without a healthy Calgary, Saskatchewan will finish first. There's no doubt in my mind. Here we are in the middle of the season, and I happen to think that's true. Toronto depends on good health as well. For them to finish first, they will need to be healthy. Hamilton has always been a team that Toronto has trouble with. They do have trouble with Hamilton. They did in the first game. And actually right now, when you look at the standings, the game between Toronto and Hamilton, the standings reflect that first game of the season where Toronto barely won. So, you know, Hamilton has, they're on a great roll. I think Coach Austin made it clear to his quarterback, do what I tell you and we'll win. Don't do what I tell you and you won't be in. So it's not that difficult a conversation that they had. Was I privy to that conversation? No. But trust me when I say this, something like that happened because no-nonsense coaches like their quarterbacks to be no-nonsense. And Montreal is going to show us what they've got today in Toronto, or should I say on Tuesday, what they've got in Toronto. It's going to be fun. It's going to be a fun week, guys. It's going to be a fun week. Now, more stories that we've been hearing about. Well, you know, they're talking on CFL.ca about the All-Star team. Now, you heard all those things. Nobody, the number here to call is 714-242-5250. If you have an opinion on who you think was missed in this wonderful little 10-reporter poll on who the best players in all the different positions are. I tell you, Sheets is far and away, right now, he continues this. He's an MVP. He has done a marvelous job. He has done what he's been asked to do. The coaching staff at the beginning of the season said, be an all-star. Be a big play player. And he has been a big play player. Is there any disappointment in the fact that, you know, the quarterback isn't getting the kind of recognition that maybe he should? Well, you know, from what I saw and from what I see, Durant got consideration as an all-star. You know, him and Ray. I happen to think that there have been some other good quarterbacks this year. This has been the year of the backup, only because of a couple of weeks where backups were called in, and together they showed a great talent. And are there surprises? There's always surprises in football because there are so many players in so many positions. You know, it's hard if you're Chad Owens to be number one. You know, he was the MOP last year. Is he the MOP this year? Probably not. Is it because he's not as good? I'll say no, it's not because he isn't as good. I just happen to think that the defenses are playing him better. And that's to be expected when they name you the MOP. That's what happens. Success in sports is followed by you begin to wear people like a suit. And that's what's happened with him. So, yeah, I don't really see any surprises right now in the All-Star balloting, if you will. And then when you consider that the teams have shown a lot of great games, we've seen a lot of great games. There haven't really been that many blowouts this season, and that's something the CFL should be proud of. Have there been teams who haven't won enough? Well, absolutely. I mean, that's totally true. And that's going to happen. But the teams who have lost poorly, even Winnipeg, Edmonton, folks, if you followed Edmonton, if you're an Edmonton fan, you know there have been some real, real heartbreaking, gut-wrenching, last-second losses that have contributed to a 1-7 record. So, really, has it been a bad year for anyone? Not really. Montreal's turned things around. Winnipeg is under new management. They have the insulation of having the best stadium in the Canadian Football League to at least soften the blow of the way their team is playing. They at least get to watch them in the comfort of Investors Group Field, which is I haven't been there, but, you know, I've seen parts of it, and I've gotten word from people who have been there. It's less than disappointing, trust me when I say that. Okay, we're going to give our buddy another chance to answer the phone, and we're going to do it on the air this time. Let's see if he answers.
As soon as possible. Thank you.
Nope. Still an answering machine. All right, I turned it off. Relax. There we go. Producers give me difficulty. Oh, I'm the producer. But I was telling the guy who was making the call to, you know. And this is the story I like. I told you at the beginning. Barker's not ruling out that Ray will be playing. That's just ridiculous. Come on. He's going to play. Now, the Ticats released Greg Peach. Well, you know, he had 6 quarterback sacks, but I guess that's not enough to keep him. Now, the NFL has kicked in, so those of us that love this part of the year, when we start seeing players come in that we had no idea, I tell you, would be here. It is going to be awesome. Now, some suggest that the BC Lions offense is really the problem in BC. Some suggest that it's because the offense isn't as inventive as it should be. Well, you know, Lule is the quarterback. Lule is the high-profile, successful quarterback. But he hasn't been able to lift the team to a level of play that the BC fans believe they should, you know, they believe they should be where Saskatchewan is. You know, Harris as well has defended his quarterback and has basically defended the way the team played. And to lose the game they did, it's funny, you know, you look at that game between BC and Montreal where the final throw of the game leads to a victory for the Montreal Alouettes in a literally last-second field goal. And how that game is viewed from fans and how much of a different perspective there is. In BC, that was a total collapse of the team. In Montreal, it was an incredible comeback. Somewhere in between those two views is what happened. Do we know what happened? No. We don't know what happened. We don't know that Lule was a terrible quarterback that day. We don't really know that. Only because we all have a perceived notion and, of course, we have a vested interest in the outcome. What I will say is a person who's not, you know, not a fan of either team, I'm not negative towards them either, what I will say is watching that game was amazing. To see a quarterback throw those interceptions and then have his team win as well, it didn't tell the story of what should be told in a game of football. You can't be that bad a quarterback and win the game. Or, which is what BC looks at, how can you have such a great defensive effort wasted by the offense? It's unbelievable. It really is. That game is the perfect example. You know, if there's a university course in football and in perceived views of a game by fans, that game is the perfect game that if you're to say in the dictionary, perspective is everything, who you root for is what matters, that game tells it all. Because both teams played really well and really badly. And it was almost like who made the last mistake, which actually is what happened. The team that made the last mistake is the one that lost. And that's the truth. That's all there is to it. So for you Montreal fans, congratulations. For you BC fans, all right, they screwed up. But they'll bounce back. We'll take a short break. And we're back right after this.
I'm Quincy Hart, and I started I Believe in Me because I saw there was a need for us to believe in ourselves more than life teaches us to believe in ourselves. People believe in negative statistics, therefore they become statistics. Elementary school students and middle school students are failing and not passing their tests. High school students are dropping out at an alarming rate. The unemployment rate is at an all-time high. With self-belief, self-confidence, and an overall positive self-image, we can fix a lot of these problems that we're facing. With the positive self-image, that elementary school student and that middle school student will succeed in class and be promoted to high school. That high school student will complete high school and graduate from college. That individual that's unemployed will find a job or create work for themselves. I believe in me, therefore I have the confidence to believe in you. I believe that you will help me fulfill my desires to pour into the younger generation. They label Generation X. Teach them the self-confidence they need to become Generation Excellent. I believe in me. I believe in you. Join me on this mission.
It is a first down for Ottawa. The football at the 24 of Saskatchewan. Clements. Coming back to throw again. Looking, gets all kinds of protection. Throws into the end zone for Gabriel. Touchdown!
In 1898, the Ottawa Football Club adopted the red and black of the Canadians that fought with Teddy Roosevelt's Rough Riders in the Spanish-American War. They also adopted the name. Et c'est à partir de ces débuts modestes que le Rouge et Noir a été associé à la ville d'Ottawa. The Carleton Ravens, Ottawa Fury FC, Ottawa 67s, and the Ottawa Senators have all adopted the colors and built their own history and traditions. Mais le Rouge et Noir se retrouve d'abord sur les chandails des équipes d'Ottawa dans la LCF. Les couleurs de Russ Jackson et de Tony Gabriel. To all who have worn the red and black, à tous ceux qui ont porté le rouge et noir, who have battled on the gridiron on behalf of our great city, et qui se sont battus sur le terrain au nom de notre belle ville. We honor your tradition. Nous préservons votre tradition as we begin to forge our own. Et nous commençons à forger la nôtre. Like the blades that cut timber in the upper Ottawa Valley, and the men who rode them down the Ottawa River past the locks of Bytown. We are balanced, dangerous, unstoppable. Nous sommes les Rouges et Noirs d'Ottawa. We are the Ottawa Red Blacks.
This was a big week of the big plays, and we talked about a couple of them, and they led to player of the week honors, and the four players that were given the nod this week: Corey Sheets, D. Webb, Tyron Carrier, Eric Delorier, and of course those four players, two of them Montreal Alouettes, did what they needed to do in great fashion to be voted the players of the week. Now, I don't think anyone can doubt that Corey Sheets is going to spend a lot of time this year. He ran for 139 yards on 24 carries, had two touchdowns in winning over Edmonton 30-27. That great a game, but Edmonton was only 3 points back. Keep reminding you, this team's going to turn things around. So he also had four receptions for 45 yards. And also, it's the seventh time this year that he has run for more than 130 yards. And he's ready to beat Mike Pringle's record in 1998 when Pringle ran for 2,065 yards. Now, it's not the first time he's won this this year. It's the second time he's won. So good for him. The Hamilton Tiger Cats, D. Webb, took the defensive player honors here in week 9. Of course, the Ticats now are 500. And the reason is he ran a touchdown back, a 38-yard interception for a touchdown. and in their win over Winnipeg, 37-14. Now, we talked about Montreal, Tyron Carrier. He was the special teams player of the week. He returned a fourth quarter quick kickoff, 90 yards for a touchdown, and it put Montreal in striking distance of the BC Lions. Of course, Montreal won in the last second, 39-38. And he is the all-time leader in kickoff return touchdowns, all-purpose yards, and reception at Houston University. So he is has been a talent for a very long time. And we talked about Eric Deslauriers. Eric made that amazing reception at the end of the game that led to the last-second field goal. And he is another leader in Eastern Michigan, all-time touchdown. And he is fifth on the Alouettes. With 150 receiving yards on 10 receptions this season. He is a native of Gatineau, Quebec, so he plays for his home province. And he's played his entire 7 years with the Montreal Alouettes. So those are the players of the week. Now, if I may, down to the last few minutes, and I know, you know, it's like Toronto Sports Network, otherwise known as TSN. This program comes out of Mississauga, and that's where I live. And my team is the Toronto Argonauts. And I cannot, without a doubt, mention the game this past week, although the Argos lost. The boat logo. It's my favorite logo that the Argonauts have, and it is one of my favorite in sports. I don't think there's a logo that says football better than the boat logo. And, of course, for those of us that live here in Ontario and fans of the Argonauts, the 83 Grey Cup champion Toronto Argonauts, led by Condor Cholloway, Dan Perrone, Jan Carinci, these guys won a Grey Cup after 31-32. I keep hearing the math somehow doesn't work in my head, but Perrone says 32 years. Okay, I'll go with Perrone, 32 years. I thought it was 31, but we'll go 32 years. And it was great to catch up with these old guys. And the most enjoyable moment for me and most humorous is, you know, I when it comes to old athletes, I kind of project myself on them, and I compare my physical health and well-being to them, you know, 30 years later. And watching them, and I use the term loosely, run onto the field at the beginning of the game. You know, football players do a lot to hurt their future health by virtue of the game that they play. But one thing they can't hurt is the love and desire of the game that we witness as football fans of the Canadian Football League witness on a weekly, oh heck, daily basis. There aren't better athletes that I've run into than the Canadian Football League players. We talk all the time about their community effort and all that. But this time, what I came away with from the experience of sharing time with the alumni, 83 Argonauts, is something that I find totally heartwarming. The passion and love for each other that these guys still have 30 years later. Jan Carinci came from the west side of Africa. Dan is still where he grew up in Oakville. Two pretty distant places. And they met here in Toronto once again. And it was like they never were separated. And this is true for a lot of the players. And here in the Mississauga area, Mississauga, Burlington, Oakville, we're very fortunate because we have many a former CFL player. Matt Damon is out here. We heard today from our guest, the Damon quarterback school. He's doing his best to raise the quality of players and the development of young men who desire to be football players. All these wonderful athletes have not only gotten older, they've gotten more respected in my eyes. When I saw the way they were and how much love they had for each other, and when I watched the new players, in this case, the Argo players, watching these guys and seeing how important it was to these old guys that they won a Grey Cup together. The fact that the Argos won it last year, and anyone else watching any other player of any other team that's won a Grey Cup, I think it brought home how important it is to be a team. I know the winning is important, but somehow I feel the camaraderie that develops on a football field, in a football dressing room, on a practice field, is as important as winning that championship. And by that I mean, it's hard to win without people you like. Nothing brought that home more than having that experience. And I'm grateful for that experience, and it was a lot of fun. And for those of you that live in the Saskatchewan area or will plan to go to the Grey Cup in Saskatchewan, consider yourselves lucky and be prepared to have a lot of wonderful memories. And when you look at the players, young and old, they will all be old down the road. And when you see them again, you will really enjoy the experience. I know I did. It was a great memory and one that I was glad to have shared again. It was a wonderful experience watching those old boat logos on the helmet. There was some displeasure with the way the uniforms were cut, but that's okay. That's small potatoes. The important thing is that the logo came back. The players that won that Grey Cup were given a chance to be cheered for once again. They were given another chance to celebrate together and enjoy the experience of being together. And for that, they should be grateful. At a time when, in my life, where some crazy stuff happens, and I'm sure for those of you too, we all have ups and downs. And the nicest thing about this experience is it makes the downs bearable, the ups more enjoyable. And for those of you that enjoyed it as much as I did, I got a high five for you if you're paying attention. A great, 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 great experience. We're going to take a musical break, and we're going to give, you know, there's only 7 minutes left. Do you think we should give Tyler another shot? Let's give him another shot this time on air. Let's see. Then we'll take
Hello,
a musical break.
Tyler, I am not available at this moment, but if you leave your name, number, and message, I will get back to you as soon as possible. Thank you.
Well, I guess he's not answering his phone. So that's the way it goes for tonight, and there was a while ago we had a guest on a Friday night, and I'd like to conclude the show tonight with her. Her name is Jessica Ridley. And for those of you that are not CFL football fans, shame on you. Give it a shot. Trust me when I say the price is right. Thanks for tuning in.
Version of a late show. Catch a look in my eyes. the game is won, the best is yet to come. Green is the color, football is the game. We're all together, and winning is our aim. So cheer us on through the sun and rain. The Shacks won, the Fighters is our name. Here at Taylor Field, we are number one. We're the best, east or west. We'll give our all till the game is done. Stand up and sing, everyone.
Hey!
Green is the color, football is the game. We're all together, and winning is our aim. So cheer us on through the sun and rain. The Shacks won, the Fighters is our name.
There's an unwritten code in Hamilton. If you live by it, chances are you've replaced the last beer in a cooler. You don't talk during the national anthem. You believe that great things can come from a little room above a fruit stand. You know Mac is a university, not a computer. Your child's first words were Oski Wee Wee. You know a red hat looks good with black and gold, and understand that double blue only looks good on the police. You believe hot water isn't a necessity for the visitor's dressing room. You've hit every green light on Main Street twice. You believe there's a little general in all of us. You only wear your good hard hat to games. You know King Kong was more than an ape, he was a five-time All-Star. You've parked on somebody's lawn to catch a kickoff. You know that Porter is a quarterback, not a bellhop. You've worn a kilt to a football game. You understand that every once in a while you have to be the center. You believe a football team can outlast 22 prime ministers, 2 world wars, a great depression, and still give birth to a pearl. You've worn a garbage bag as a raincoat. You've never seen a fair catch. You pick a concession line not based on how long the line is, but how hot that cashier looks. You understand that Labor Day is more than an extra day off. And no matter what happens on the field, your season is a success if you beat the Argos.
Beat the Argos. The nerve of that guy to say that kind of stuff. All right, just for that, I'm going to play another Ticat thingy. No, I don't have time to play another Ticat thingy. Well, thanks for tuning in. For those of you that listen, thank you for listening. For those of you that are listening live, sorry you didn't call. For those of you that are listening on recording, on stream, all you have to do, I post it where I can, where football fans are. And I always hope that you guys will call in and help make the program better. It's a place for us to talk football, to talk the CFL. And today, of course, on Rouge Radio, joining us, CFL and the CIS. And we'll be doing that from week to week. We'll be keeping up with the CIS. And I hope you join us. And if you have the time, give us a call at 714-242-5250. And it's very simple. Just click the link. It'll take you to the show. Now, depending when you click it, you won't necessarily hit it live. But sometimes if you fool around with the player, you can catch up and miss the first part. But trust me, you can always listen to the whole thing later. I got a few people that do that, and thank you to those people. I have some loyal listeners, and I appreciate that. And we really do enjoy interviewing people who love the game of football, and I hope someday to hear from you. And all you'll have to do is call 714-242-5250. And you can also message me on Candid Frank Live Stanny Sheet. It's my last name. On my Facebook page, and you can ask a question through there if you wish as well. Thank you for the friends that I made today. You've been listening to Candid Frank Live, streamed on Rouge Radio. Have a great week, everyone.